Hey, welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel
to my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life, how to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back to The Screenwriting Life. I'm getting ready to go on vacation, so we thought we'd talk about taking a vacation from your writing.
So even though the grind of being a writer can feel like it's never ending, you know, you're always working, you're always processing and thinking about story, giving ourselves the opportunity to vacate to vacation is really an important part of our work.
So, but before we get into our topic, we're going to talk about our week, or what we like to call adventures in screenwriting. Lorianne, how was your week?
My week was good. Actually, really good this week. I don't have the usual, like, it was good, and then here's how it was terrible. I did an awful lot of peopling, and it was exhausting in a way that I'm not used to. I directed voice actors for one of my projects, and I went to a big writer dinner for, you know, and I just, it was a lot of peopling, and I had to recover. And like, I felt sick the next day after multiple days of this, which is so odd for me. And I know it's a symptom of the pandemic and how, you know, I'm not in the same rhythm I used to be. But it also feels a little, I guess, it's just I'm dealing with the sort of, we talk about it a lot, productivity, rewarding yourself for productivity and getting a lot done, not being able to people as hard and as much as I was pre-pandemic. I don't really have my people legs back. Feels like a failure of some kind, right? Like, I know the whole world is, we're all adjusting, but you know, I'm such an extrovert and I love to be out in the world. I was just so surprised that I responded the way I did. Like, oh, I need to spend the day and just chilling. And so I'm trying not to think about that as a failure and just sort of noticing that, you know, things are a little different now. We all still have to adjust, even though everyone's acting like everything's back to normal, that all of us are, some of us are going to have this sort of adjustment period, being back around other people and what that is. Even those of us who are like extreme extroverts and love it while we're doing it. But then as I was driving home, I was like, oh my God, I was just so tired.
Yeah, for sure.
But one thing I did want to talk about, I took my daughter to see the LA Ballet Sleeping Beauty this couple days ago. And, you know, it was lovely. And, you know, the music is so important to me. The Sleeping Beauty, Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, is one of my favorite movies. The artwork, Evan Earle's artwork, has always been a big piece of my, I don't know, animation taste. I just love it. And, you know, I even gave my daughter the middle name Rose after that story. But what was so interesting to me is watching the ballet version of it and where the music was originally in the ballet and then where the music is now in the film is totally different, and how the narrative has changed, and that the adaptation that Disney did was so fearless, taking this beloved ballet, this beloved piece of music, and moving things around and changing the story. And it's still at its heart the same thing, but just how when you're adapting something important, well-known IP, you have to take big risks. And I know we talk about this a lot, and I'm adapting something right now, and it's like, oh, right, I have to give myself the freedom to just take big swings, and that it still honors the original. I'm not in any way saying that the original needed to be improved. I'm saying this is my take on it, which is, I think, a really important distinction I need to make for myself. Like, I'm not making this better. I'm not saying this wasn't good to begin with. I'm just saying, like, here's a different version of the story with the same components. So anyway, I was watching the ballet, and like, the music was showing up in different places, so it had different emotional resonance. I was like, oh, this is that part, but it's not in the ballet. So it was really fun.
That's cool.
Anyway, so that was my week. Yeah.
How was your week, Jeff?
You know, I was, as you both know, I was out of town last week on a family vacation. Speaking of vacation, which was really nice. I read a book, which is something I'm trying to do now, just to like prove that I'm still literate. So I have been doing that more and more, and I'll talk more about it. I think like it's great for us to try to be reading novels if we can as writers, even as screenwriters. And I'll talk more specifically about that later in the show. But I had like an interesting, I feel like I had the first moment, not the first, but what feels like a bit of a pillar moment for me, realizing that like I am very different than the rest of my family. And that's okay. And that's fine. But I had kind of a complicated conversation with my sister, actually. You know, I'm lucky to grow up in a family that has a lot of love in it. And, you know, I'm from the Midwest, and maybe our Midwest listeners can relate that like family, and for positive and maybe some kind of quietly passive aggressive negative elements, can be a really wonderful, but sometimes challenging thing. And I don't know, I'm trying to speak vague to respect the privacy of my family, but also speak and make the experience about my experience of the situation. But I'm premiering a film in a film festival next week, and I finally sent the DCP in and like the final ProRes locked file and the sound mix. And it was stressful because I had put it together and then I had to leave, and I got a message from the festival that was like, there's a problem with the render, something's wrong. So I had to like figure out a way to connect to my computer here. And it just felt like a bit of an emergency. But I had a conversation later in the week with my sister, and she was like, it seems like your MO around your work is like panic and like roller coaster, and like, this is an emergency. And I was like, that's really interesting. And she was like, yeah, I mean, this is not good, bad, right, or wrong, but like both of my sisters have taken more traditionally stable paths. You know, they're married with jobs where there's an office and a paycheck and a human resources department. And that's not at all the life I've chosen. And I think it makes my family worried. And I feel like when I let them into the roller coaster of what it feels like to be an artist, I'm burdening them with something. But then at the same time, I also feel like I reserve the right and the prerogative to like be who I am and be honest around them. And, you know, I finally got to the point with my sister, I was like, you know, to a certain extent, I think like my experience of a bit of a roller coaster emotional life is also probably the thing that made you cry when we watched the movie that I screened for you this week, right? Like, I think truthfully, like we're just a little different, and there's something inside of me that maybe does experience life in a bit more of a hurricane than you. But like, I also think that's probably the thing that makes me not only want to do this, but hopefully makes me kind of good at this. So I don't know. It was an interesting and kind of a challenging conversation, but I want to be conscious of not burdening my family with who I am. I don't know. Or what I do.
No, let's rephrase that.
Yes.
Let's rephrase that.
Well, I don't know if you all can relate.
I can relate. I mean, you know, boy, once you have kids, you have to be super careful. You're not burdening them with those swings up and down. Right. And you do anyways, because every family has them, whether you're an artist or not, in terms of parenting. But I'm lucky because I'm married to an artist, so we both are swinging all over this house, our poor kids. I admire your sister for saying it in that her own need, which is you're basically in artist language, you're freaking me out.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think it's about not sharing who you are, but do they need to take the ride with you? There are certain people in your life that don't want the details.
Right.
Right. They just don't. And that's fair. And that's a different kind of relationship and friendship or family, or, you know, and you can have an intimate relationship with them. It's just, there's certain, they don't want to take the ride with you. Right. Because let's face it, they might have their own anxieties and how they handle it. Who knows? Right. I eat cookies. Like, everybody does it differently, but is there other ways you can share who you are as an artist with them? Like the movie, it sounds like they cry. That's sharing yourself with them. That sounds like it went well.
It was, right? You know, I was really heartened by it. It's funny. It's, I think like my mom or my whole family, I think it's probably complicated for them to like be watching a movie that has a lot of language in it and a couple provocative scenes. But I think despite herself, my mom like really liked the movie in a way that felt honest when she was talking about, you know, and I'm going to be screening it for some folks in the Midwest later this fall. And like some of my church going friends that I grew up with. And I think it's a funny thing where my mom's like, you know, Jeff, if I didn't know you made it, I'm sure I would have been fine with it. Like, I watch Ozark. Like, that's the thing she keeps coming back to. And I think I might need to, just before I show this to all of like the teachers I grew up with when I was a fourth grader, or like my confirmation mentor at church, being like, I know that you also watch Ozark. So just like, I'm telling you that now before you watch this movie.
But, well, so it's a very vulnerable position you're putting yourself in.
It's incredibly vulnerable.
Different side of yourself than maybe they are used to. Did you take it that your sister was basically saying, I don't want to know that side of you?
No, I think she was just saying, we worry about you. Yeah. Like, I think it, and I just had to explain, like, I'm very happy, right? Like, you love waking up and knowing exactly what your life looks like all the time, and feeling a sense of stability is what fuels you. And like, great, like, I want that too, but I also love the surprise of life when you don't know exactly what it's going to look like. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be pursuing this. And this might not be forever. I feel like I have something in me that probably means it will be, because I don't want to let go of this. So it was a really healthy conversation and really healing. And I think the truth is, like, honesty is usually the best policy when it comes to these things, because like with the movie, even if my parents are freaked out by the language, I think they can tell it's me trying to be as honest as possible. And they're very moved by that. It's a conversation I had with my sister. We both came to the agreement that we're super different, but like, if we can look at ourselves honestly and talk about our lives honestly, like, that's the best way to be happy. So it felt healthy and interesting and kind of challenging. And I'm just thinking about it a lot.
Well, it's incredibly insightful, not just the honesty. And as an artist, that is our calling. There's a kind of honesty that we push towards, which can drive our, you know, families crazy. But also, I think the insight that you said to her, this makes me happy. I understand that this doesn't make you happy.
Right.
If you going to wake up every day and do this, but this actually is fulfilling to me and makes me happy to go on the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I think that's such a great insight.
I think it's really important. Those of us who are artists and pursuing this, we want other people, like our family, our friends, to see us and validate our choices, right? But we also have to be open to their lives and their choices, right?
Right.
I used to work in an office. It was not a wonderful experience for me, right? So, but I have to be very careful not to judge someone else who makes that choice. And I think it's both ways. Which is tricky, right? Because we're so like, validate me. But they want validation too, that we're not saying I'm better than because I work in Hollywood or whatever, you know? So like, I have a very close relationship with my sister. She's a teacher, which is very important, but she likes stability, consistency, organization. And I am like an explosion in the opposite direction. And sometimes she asks me like, what do you do like during the day? Or how do you make a living? And I can't ever quite articulate it to her in a way that makes sense to her. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, I have meetings and I write and then I brainstorm and I do things. She's like, but how is that work? I'm like, I don't know. I can't talk. I can't tell you. Right. It's so we just sort of accept that we are both just very different. But it's hard. It's really hard.
And I'm glad you said that, Lauren.
It's a good job.
Because it can get, as artists, like, we also run the risk of potentially being condescending on our end too, if we hold ourselves in a different light because we're pursuing something quote noble, right? I think we just have to be careful. And like, I think when we're having these conversations, especially with family, like trying to be truthful and tactful and respectful. And I think acknowledging that different is okay, right? Like different is good. I love you because of your character and your heart and your life looks different than what I would want, but like, that's wonderful. And you just have to kind of start from there and then you can unpack the feelings.
Well, that's amazing. Cause I'm sure you guys got closer. I know it sounds hard, but closer, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's going to teach me to guard a little bit how much like you said, Meg, like it's especially for my mother. I think what she wants to hear is things are great and easy and great, even if they're not. And it's like, I can of course be honest with her, but like, also I have a wife to unpack that stuff with. Yes, and you know, I
have different relationships to do that with. And by the way, your mother, I'm sure, speaking as a mother, wants to know like when it's really hitting the fan and you need her or you need that. Of course. But all the details, I don't know if I want all the details of what my son's getting up to right now in Europe. You know what
Especially
I mean?
Like once he's in his 30s, like that'll change too. You know, it's right, a weird, exactly. The weird thing about parenting is like your job is to make someone depend on you and to the point where your job then becomes for them to not depend on you. Your job is for them to get as close and carry them until it's their job to do what your job used to be.
But you're going to worry about them forever.
Of course. My mom will. And
she's going to worry about it forever.
She still does, for sure. Yeah. I learned that this week.
Yeah. It's funny, but I love how they responded to the film too. That it sounds like they spoke about it and they could talk about it and how that moved them. It sounds so respectful to you as an artist that they took your story in and saw you. My dad saw the first movie I produced and he said, you know, honey, I know you did a lot of work, but why would anybody ever want to make that?
that's not great.
Because it had a really unhappy ending. that made him really upset. And he did not like that. Like he was allergic to emotional response. So he was so kind of like, just now I can look back at it and have actually empathy for him that in a weird way, it was a compliment. Like I made him feel something so deeply. He had such a big reaction to it. But of course, at the time when you're 25, you're like, oh my God.
Well, the thing you eventually learn is you are your parents, right? So like, you know, it's all the things I might I might resent about my mom.
Pass.
Things I actually resent about myself. Like, and so even I think she connected to it because she's a bit of a roller coaster person just like me. So, you know, it was really great.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm so grateful. I'm just so grateful that they were as supportive. They're being, even if it's not exactly the movie they normally watch, they're being enormously supportive around it, which is very rare. And like, I want to acknowledge that I'm very grateful for that. So
it's amazing. It's amazing. They saw you, they are recognizing you, you know, and they love you so much that they don't want to go through the ringer with you.
Right. That's what it is.
It's too painful because they don't have any control over helping you.
Right. That's exactly
the
right.
The details are actually quite painful because how is she going to help you?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get it. My week was, you know, I'm in that stage of writing where deadlines are arriving and you're getting input and you have to start now be very surgical. Even if what comes is big, right? Like there's no more blow it up because it's due. And that's, you know, that's live action or animation. Do a draft is due into a studio or a screening's coming and they're literally in edit or whatever. And it's not working. So how do you surgically do this so that certain drawings or, you know, you really have to be kind of a different kind of artist and creator then, and how to make the fewest changes in terms of the time you have that have the biggest ripple effect, right? And this is a whole job in Hollywood, by the way. You can come in at different stages where you get, it's called a weekly, and they give you 1 week to change the whole thing, basically, which means it's like a party game, you know, or you can do this, we have to reshoot. We have enough, you know, reshoot money for 2.5 scenes. What would you do? Because nobody likes the main character. How can we in 2.5 scenes have such a big ripple effect? And I kind of love it as a party game. And if I wasn't leaving on vacation and have a ton of stuff to do in order to leave on vacation, I don't mind this stage, but I'm just a little bit overwhelmed. And it's hard to, I have to compartmentalize, I think, right? Because you know, when you have like we talk about barf drafts, like you're just going to dump, right? And there's a different anxiety to that, right? Because you don't have a path and where am I in the woods and am I getting lost? So I'm not saying that can't be, I have stuff to it, but this is not a dump. Like you can't just, I might dump in order to find the sentence, right? I might dump in order to find, oh no, this is why the poles aren't lining up because look, they're talking about this here and this here, and it's confusing. It's mushy. Like, it's weird, like putting, you know, this is the stage where people start putting their finger on the mushy parts, right? That they're just not sharp yet. They're not super clear, or I'm getting kind of lost here. Because it's also for the read, if it's for a script or an edit for the experience of the sequence. So I have to do that before I leave. And at the same time, getting images of my kid in Europe, having a great time. So that's fun. It's super fun. I have the, you know, the gift he gave me at the gate after I left him at the airport. I'm driving home and my phone bings because he's finally hooked his phone up so I can see where he is. Right. Aww, because as a teenager, they're sweet. Never letting you do that. And I didn't ask him to do it. He just did it because he knew I was anxious. So like I'm watching his little A for Aiden move towards the gate in Germany. So, you know, it's just, I can see where he's going. I'm not watching. I'm not looking that much. I swear to God, I'm not looking that much. But I think that the overwhelm I'm in, I also is part of our topic today in taking a vacation. Because I think number one, it's detoxing out of that overwhelm can be oddly bumpy. And also be anxiety producing in and of itself, to just stop. But it also, for me, I have to have a vacation in the distance or I will get overwhelmed to the point of being drowned by it. Like, whereas if I know, like even right now I'm talking to friends about, well, spring break next year, what are we doing? Like I'm always It doesn't have to be expensive. I mean, having to go to Europe this night, it doesn't have to be expensive. It could be, let's go rent a house together. Let's go, I don't know. Let's go to the spa, whatever. I have to have those things, or I'm worried I won't stop, which, you know, I don't, Joe, my husband just said to me, Meg, it's like you've been in production for 2 years, you know, because of COVID, boy, you really didn't do those things, right? So you really just kept going and going. And so I do think they're super important, and that you've got to detox out of the overwhelm and you've got to slow it down, because we're artists. And number one, you will burn out both physically with your adrenals. Mentally, you can burn out, but also your creativity, that you can draw and draw and draw. And then eventually you do need to rest. You do need to rest. So that is our topic for today, taking a vacation. Lori, did you have anything you want to talk about? I have some other thoughts.
Yeah.
What's your thought?
The struggle for me always with taking any time, even if it's like checking out at the end of the day or the weekend, if I like, I'm going to take the weekend off. If I still have projects going and I have deadlines coming up, it's really hard to turn that off. So I have to figure out how to schedule a vacation, but make sure I've delivered everything that has meaning, that has like a real deadline attached to it, because I'll just space out when I'm on vacation. I'll be walking, I don't know, some, you know, through Italy, because I'm saying that as wish fulfillment, that I'm going to manifest. I get to go back to Italy one day. You know, I'll be walking, it's beautiful, and I'll just go inside and lose myself churning on some story problem I have. And it's not fair to me. It's not fair to my family. It's not fair to me, you know, because I don't get the opportunity to check out, check away. But it's so hard to imagine, especially right now. I have 5 things going on and everything's coming at me and I feel so overwhelmed and so like, what's it called when you get like adrenaline poisoning?
You know? I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I feel like, so I, after I, you know, we finished recording today, I have to go ride my bike, which I've been off for a really long time, but I have to figure out a better way to manage my day to day, which for me is like, okay, it's a vacation. I'm going to get on my Peloton and I'm going to have a vacation from myself in this space.
Yeah. I mean, having a deadline, like if you're going to go on vacation, it was important to me because I'm going to go for quite a long time. I've never taken a vacation this long before. And I'm very lucky that it also is coinciding with, in layman's terms, kind of going into the studio, so to speak, like this part of the step is done, right? So that when I come back, there's nothing for me to do. So when I come back, you might get notes, you might get initiated for a second step, whatever's going to happen, but there's nothing I can do about that. So I can actually, when that, for my brain, when I actually have done that kind of turn in, I can shut it off. I can literally just forget about it because there's nothing to do. But like you, if it's not, and there's still a problem and I have to write it when I get home, no, that's a terrible way to go on vacation.
I think it's really hard for writers, for artists to plan vacations too. For like personally, for me, it's like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be working next February. I don't know if I'll have a lot of money or no money. I don't know if I'll have a project that is in development and the script is due on that date. You know, there are so many unknowns. It's really hard to put a stake in the ground and say, no matter what's going on, I'm going to do this, because it also feels like if I do that, I'll be missing out on something that comes my way that's just right there. You know, I've been living in that reality for a while. I've not done a bunch of stuff, but I've sort of always been this way. You know, I remember when I first started at Pixar, you know, I was like a week or two into Ratatouille, and a really good friend of ours was getting married in Ireland. And I was like, I can't go. I can't possibly leave my new job after a week or however long I was on it. And looking back, I'm like, it would have been fine. Everyone around me was telling me it's fine, go on your vacation. And I didn't, because I prioritized work so heavily. And then I regret not going to that wedding in Ireland. It would have been fun. And also when you don't go to a wedding, there's a little that happens between people, right? You're like, I can't make it. But so I don't know how to solve that problem of saying, you know, fuck it. No matter what's happening next February, I'm doing this thing.
Well, and that's what I do. That's why I plan so far out, because I like buy the tickets, man. Like I've bought the tickets. So now I have the money spent on the tickets. So that starts to start some weight towards, well, you got to go.
Okay, great. How about this? Here's what I'm pledging.
You got to put a stake in the ground or you're never going.
I'm going to take my family to Italy next spring break. I'm going to go.
Deal.
I'm going to do it.
Just buy the tickets and then you're going. And no matter what comes up, you have to be like, I have all these tickets to go to Italy. Everybody will work it out. They work it out. And listen, yes. Worst case scenario. You're in the middle of shooting a show and you can't go. You're shooting a show. Congratulations.
Right. Exactly.
Hooray. Hooray.
But it's so like the fear, the anxiety, all that stuff, it can eat you up. And then it's years later and you haven't done anything. Like oh my God, what if during this time I'm doing something? And then that week comes around and you're like, I'm not doing anything. I could have totally gone on a trip this week. You know,
the other reason it's really important to take these breaks, not just for your health and not just for all the reasons we're talking about. You need to take it. You need to take them so you are a good writer, so that you are an accomplished writer, so that your writing skills will get better, which sounds crazy, right? Like I'm telling you not to write, which I'm always telling people to write if you want to be a writer. But once you've got that skill together of you actually are writing, by the way, because let's back up a step. There's a difference between I'm resting to avoid writing and I'm resting because I've written. So you have to be honest with yourself about it.
How dare
it.
You?
You have to be honest with yourself. No, that's not you, Lauren. But let's assume you have written a lot and you are taking a break. I do believe with my whole heart and soul that as a conduit of the universe in this sacred position of writer, if you've been giving and giving and giving and giving and giving, you do need time for quiet, so that you can hear your own voice again. Because especially when you're in these pro jobs, you have a lot of notes coming in or a lot of people participating, or maybe there's just different kinds of projects and your projects have been put to the back. Like I do believe it's so important to get quiet long enough to hear your own purpose, to hear your own longing, to hear what you want, to hear what you're just interested in, for things to start bubbling up into your creative consciousness. Right. My friend used to call it your own inner landscape needs its own time and its own nurturing. And yes, we should be doing it every day with meditation or writing. That part of us, that creative inner landscape, can get overwhelmed, not just by work, but by other media. Right. Like if all we're ever doing is watching other shows or watching movies, which by the way, I love, but we're never getting quiet. It's always just coming in, right? Or it's just pouring out for other people. So I do think it's super, super important as a sacred duty of being an artist to get quiet sometimes. Now, having said that, I'm going to Italy and it ain't going to be quiet. No, it will be for a couple of days, but it's almost like, I'm like, God, I do plan these trips to keep me busy. That part of it is COVID because I just want to go to a different place and experience a different thing and have different experiences to fill me up, which is definitely good for that interior landscape to go see different, take yourself out of your bubble and see different things, meet different people, have different experiences that will all feed back into that creative landscape. You know, the other side of that coin for me is my friend once said to me that there's a Buddhist saying that busyness is the highest form of laziness. And that this inner landscape can start to atrophy because what's also in that inner landscape often is lava, right? There's beauty and things will bubble up, but sometimes it's under the bubbles, right? So we keep ourselves so busy to not deal with it and not look at it. And that's where I think rest, vacation can actually start to feel threatening in a way. Because if you get too quiet, what will come up? I'm not as worried about that on this trip because like I said, I'm going to be very busy with two teenage boys in Europe. But I have put into the trip some quiet days where really it's going to literally be, there's nothing to do. If the boys want to go somewhere, they can go. Or because that is also super important to just do nothing and look at the lake or the waving sunflower field or whatever it's going to be. So I do think that quiet time, and I'm specifically recovering, I think, from a kind of exhaustion. So I have to be careful on this trip. I don't further exhaust myself. And so I haven't like booked a lot of tours, and I have a special needs kid too, so we can't do that kind of stuff. And part of me is literally like, what am I doing? I'm taking this kid to Europe. I have no idea how this is going to go, guys. I have no idea. It might be a total fucking disaster, but it's not going to be, because my husband and I have agreed, no matter what happens, it's fine. And we're going to have an experience. And this is the experience we're having. And if he has a meltdown screaming in some church that echoes off the walls, see, I'm a writer, so I can imagine this, right? Then he does. And we'll just take him outside. And that will be an experience for everybody to have loving kindness in a church. So I want him to have experiences too. He's been a bubble. He's been in his room. He needs to have experiences and see different world and hear different languages. He's not going to understand a lot of it. But that, how great, right? To expand his mind, to expand his interior landscape. I think it's so important. And it's because you have this sacred duty. It's not just for you that you need to take this rest and nurture this landscape. It's for the collective unconscious. It's for all of us, right? We all need to be doing this, especially as these conduits. So that's kind of all I'm thinking about it. Like, I can get overwhelmed by the busyness itself of the vacation. You know, where are the train tickets? Did I print them out? You know, blah, 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 right? But once I get there, I feel like whatever happens, happens, people. Like, this is the universe having vacation with me. It's going to bring me challenges that are opportunities. That's the only way I can think about it right now, right? We missed the train. We missed the train. By missing the train, we got to meet the guy eating the sandwich that we never would have met before if we hadn't missed the train. Like, we're going to have to be creative and flow with whatever happens. Can you hear me talking to myself right now?
Yes. And also, I just want you to remember the food, right? Every challenge can, there's an opportunity to try. Oh, we got lost. Well, look at this little place where we can eat.
Exactly. Oh, this is great. Like, let's try that food. I mean, listen, it's Italy. I literally went on Weight Watchers just so I could eat in Italy. So I could lose the weight to start, and now I'm just not going to worry about it anymore.
Jim Gaffigan, he talks about how vacation is really just us killing time between eating.
Like, yeah,
you'll be at a meal and you'll be like, well, what do we do next? I don't know, what's for dinner? Like, we could eat.
So true. Yeah, it's so true. And I can't wait to be walking around for wondering where we should eat lunch.
Oh,
and
it's the best. You
know, it's gonna be so good. I also learned that busyness can be a trauma response. It's a survival instinct, right? So I've been looking forward to my future in terms of what's my next beacon, and do I just want to stay busy for busy's sake? And yes, part of it is you have to earn a living. Are you going to really not take that project that is possibly money? And I say possibly because you never know until 6 months later, but even the possibility of money, like, that is also a very real survival instinct that's very, very real. But at some point, I do think you have to still be taking projects on your own path that's fulfilling your own interior and purpose and beacon, because those are the ones you're going to do well and will be of you. And if I just stay way too busy, I'm going to miss those. Okay, so I have to be sure that I have time to scaffold towards the projects I want, towards the, you know, if I, let's say I want to do a, I want to do a TV show, and this kind of TV show, I have to scaffold towards that. And that takes some space and time. And it also takes that downtime to dream about it and to think about it and ponder it. And what do I need? And if I'm just staying busy doing all of these projects and never resting, that dreaming never happens. And that busyness feels like survival, and it feels good. And it feels like I'm accomplishing stuff. But am I? I mean, I am, because I'm supporting my family and I'm accomplishing a lot, but you need to be accomplishing too, why you were chosen to be here and what kind of artist you want to be. And I think resting is when that stuff gets more clear and you can really hear yourself better. And if it's a little bit of lava, then it is, right? You need that for your work anyways, whatever's coming up. So I do think I'm looking forward to that too, that kind of beautiful space to just dream. You got it. To dream, you need to rest.
I have a vacation scheduled for August, which is the week before a massive project I've been working on is due to the studio. So I just realized that this morning as I was walking the dog, and I was like, well, shit, because I really want a vacation. I really want to check out. So I'm trying to figure out, how do I do that? And I realized brilliant people are working with me on this project. They know exactly what we're trying to do. And I can say, well, you know, do it. Because I need a break, you know, and then I'll come back and
And you'll fill yourself up. And the other thing that happens, you have some distance. You've got to get some distance from those projects, man. You can get too close to not even be able to see it, right? And the closest can help. Like right now, I'm so close, I can do this quick work in a week because I'm so close. I know exactly the buttons or the mushy bits to turn the dials. But the bigger thinking.
When you were talking about the feeling of like, oh no, if I'm gone, like people won't be able to get a hold of me, or I'll be letting people down. And I like really relate to that. So first of all, thank you for sharing. And I always challenge myself of like, I'm probably overestimating the amount to which I'm needed, right? Like I want to challenge myself to give other people, like you just said, to give other people the space to be really good at their jobs and figure it out themselves. And I think like as writers, as artists, and particularly as writers, we're the protagonists of our own story and we're the hero and people do rely on us. And again, that's the superpower that makes our writing interesting. But like sometimes someone else can be the protagonist for a week and we can just go on vacation. And like, I think I have to really push myself to do that because we tend to think of our lives as this all-encompassing narrative where I'm in this really important chapter right now. And if I'm not there, something might go wrong. But that could be just our storytelling instinct hopping on the roller coaster. And like, maybe I just have a coffee in South Carolina this week and then I come back.
Like and maybe you just might, and something really important might happen there.
Yep.
Some realization, some clarity, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I'm like, when Meg, when you were sharing about like you might have an experience with your son where he loses it in Notre Dame, like that might be hard, but also like probably in a year that will lead to a really rich scene in something you're writing. Like it's like that conversation I had with my sister. I've never had the space to get that deep with her, but it's only because we were like sitting on the beach watching the ocean. So I think
exactly. How else are you going to do it if you're just always in dinners or moving and going, you know, versus. It's funny, right? How if you give it space, things start to bubble up, right? And especially if you've made the other person feel safe enough to say it, which clearly you did, those bubbles can be intimidating and scary, and we can stay very busy to avoid those bubbles. But here's my thought, they're coming anyways. So better to be quiet and rejuvenate and let them bubble up when you have the space for them versus the fucking eruption that's coming because you've been ignoring it for too long, right? So they bubble up, right? Whether you want them to or not. So let's do it in a quiet space. I mean, I'm going to take a notebook and try to do some writing, and not about writing, but journaling, shall we say, or thought-provoking things, and read novels and poetry to just for nourishment, really.
Yeah. This also applies to, you could take a week off and just be in the world here, wherever you are, right? You don't have to go to wherever. You don't have to, you know, if you can't afford it, which is, you know, a big story headline for a lot of people.
Go on a hike. Why
I'm going to buy the tickets to Italy. And then I'm like, oh my God, how much money is that going to cost? But, you know, it also, so that's like the macro of it, but it's also the weekend. If I'm intentionally taking a break on the weekend, how do I do that? How do I manage my brain so that I can put something aside and come back to it so that I can organize around that time? But I think it's even smaller than that. It's on the day to day. You have to be able to practice that on the day. Okay, today I'm going to take care of myself in some way and give myself space. Like right now I'm really struggling. I like to, when I have a show, have a central image that I could like print out and pin up. And it's always back to that. Like on Tab Time, my central image was a big bowl of fruit, right? It's beautiful. We recognize what each thing is. It's colorful. And it's also sweet and good for you, right? So everything for it, like every script, every writer I hired, the set design, the costumes, everything was a big bowl of fruit. And so I'm always trying to find that thing. That's a really simple thing to articulate to anybody. And I haven't found it yet on one of the projects I'm working on. And it might not be in my head, right? I might have to go out and take a walk or watch a TV show or read a book. And so that's what I have to do today, because I can't write on it until I know what that thing is, because there's too many questions around it. So, you know, as I'm working on the color of the characters, it's like, well, I don't know what the central image is for me, you know, what that guiding thing is. So it's like on the macro, yes, we have to take a big vacation. We have to give ourselves this big physical, brainal, whatever sort of rejuvenation. But I think it's also the day-to-day, the hour-to-hour, how am I feeding myself so that I can access that sort of the tap you talk about, Meg, right? Like, and it might not always be sitting in front of your computer. It could be, and I'm just throwing this out there, doing laundry, for example, which is something I have to do today, right? You have to make space for things that, you know, chores that feel good and not resent it. Like I get in this space where I will resent having to pay the bills or do laundry or 3:30, I gotta go pick up my kid. You know, it's like, or I'm gonna use that instead of doing that busyness thing, right? I'm busy right up to the minute. It's I think it's just a change of mind. It's really hard though, right? Because the pressure and the anxiety and everything is so big in me right now because I have too much going on. But like, how do I pull back and say, oh, I get to pick up my kid. I'm gonna relax. I'm gonna spend the time driving there, sort of dumping some stuff so that I can be available when she gets in the car from her first day in camp, you know, and so I can be available for her and that experience. So I can really listen to her instead of just like, I got to get her home. I got to give her a snack so I can go back to work.
Yes, right. Being
that's
present.
Really hard.
You got to be present in your own life.
And we talk about this a lot, right? And sometimes I feel like I have a handle on it and sometimes I don't. And right now I don't. So I'm really working on it. But I think it's just that like taking a vacation for an hour today. What does that look like? You know, turning my brain off.
I love that. Jeff, you had a thought about reading.
Will be driving across town to get my kid and doing laundry.
Well, I don't know if you all will relate to this, but I sometimes if I'm reading scripts, even really good scripts, first of all, I can feel like work because in a good way, because we're looking at the greats to perfect our craft. And the ugliest part of me would say sometimes it feels a little threatening because you're reading something that you know you'll never be as good as. But there's something about reading really good fiction that's not a script. Like I embarrassingly told the story of reading a novel for the first time in a while on a vacation I took earlier this year. And like my first thought was, why is this in past tense? Which is a sign that I need to be like reading more books. But I read Normal People by Sally Rooney. And I think there is a TV show that I didn't watch, but it was just so good. And I think what was helpful for me is like, Lauren, you're talking about that work voice that can be hard to quiet. Sometimes reading is a great way for me to feel like I'm feeding myself and like being productive in the sense that I'm like getting immersed in beautiful writing and art, but I don't feel threatened by it. And I don't feel some kind of pressure that I need to be doing something because of it rather than just taking it in and absorbing the power of wonderful art. And for me, novels are a great way to like ease into something and lose time without panicking while I'm on vacation. I don't know.
That's why I literally a couple of years ago made that commitment to myself, and I pretty much do it, not every day, but every day I get up super early and I walk to the coffee shop and I have a tea and I read my book. That I'm going to start my day with this immersive novel experience. And yes, sometimes I pick up my phone, but I try really to be disciplined about starting my day that way, because for that exact reason, because it does get your brain off of whatever you're whirling on and lets you kind of go down into a very nourishing experience. I love to go see dance for the same reason. I love my magazine that's called The Sun that I've recommended on this show before, because it's little bites of that, so you can do it quickly. But I totally agree that the other arts, go to a gallery. They're going to feed that stream in you, right? You know, go down, if you're in LA, go down to MoMA or go to MoCA, you know, just get fed, go to LA County Museum, because walk around, just these are other artists with their taps on, right? And it's odd. It does start to inspire you in a different kind of way. So I think that's really, really important.
The frustrating part about this is that it requires discipline. It's another discipline, right? Like in addition to I write every day, it's like, oh, I have to actually get my shit together on a whole other level.
But once you do it and it is nourishing, it's not, because I want to do that over everything else.
So it's more about, well, I have to stop doing it and go back. Like, you know what I mean? And I know that exercise is that way for some people, which has never been for me. But reading a book, no, that's my happy place, right? Like that's,
but, and again, but what I'm talking about is making that a priority, right? Like all I want to do is read all day long, right? I have stacks of books all over, but it's sort of, I'm going to prioritize giving myself that space at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock every morning and reading, just like when I'm going to ride my bike, I'm going to do the thing, right? It's discipline instead of always being in the, gotta sit down, gotta work, you know, that the panic. You have, like, it's discipline to give yourself that time to, I'm going to have
it
a team read the book.
It was at first. Yeah. It's not anymore. Now it's my sacred time that I want to do because I walk there. So I start the day looking at the trees and I get to nourish my body. And I, sometimes I just read for 20 minutes and I walk back. And so it's been a total of 40 minutes, right? Again, I can't do it every day, but I do want to do it now. Like I actually get upset if I can't do it. So, and I get mad and resentful, like nothing else. Cause if I'm not whole, if I'm not present, if I'm not here, I can't write. Right. It's it's so funny. I think a lot of times we think of rest as something that we don't deserve or we don't have to do, but in fact you do. In fact you do. It's an incredibly important part of it.
I heard a story, just as a thought experiment, I heard a story about someone who created an email autoresponse that said, I'm on vacation and I'm not reading email. I'm gone for 2 weeks. And when I return from my 2 week vacation, I plan on deleting every email I receive during this time. So if you really want to get a hold of me, you'll need to resend an email starting on this day. And at first I bristled at that. And my response was like, how dare you? But the truth is, if it's that important, either I'll figure it out myself or I'll send the email again. I just thought there was, when we talk about agency,
or you'll reach out to someone else who can help you.
Yep. Or you'll reach out to someone else. Or if it's that important, I probably know that person so I can get a hold of them anyway. And I don't know, we talk about agency on this show and creating characters who are able to fulfill their own desires and manifest what they want. And if we start getting too like slavish to our own work, like we're not the protagonist of our life anymore. And I don't know, my response to that was probably envy or resentment that person has such a self-assured sense of agency in his own life. So it's just something I haven't been able to stop thinking about. And I'm like, would I ever do that? I don't know, maybe.
It's so interesting because we do think of rest as selfish. But in fact, that's what I'm trying to say even to myself. It's not. It is essential. It's essential so that you can give, so that you can be on your purpose, so that you even know what your purpose is and have that agency. Nobody can do this without resting. It's not possible.
All right. So we're getting on to Lori and Meg's favorite part of the show, which is when we read Apple Podcast reviews from you all. In the same way that taking a vacation takes discipline, the three of us are getting disciplined that it's a wonderful thing to receive positive feedback from you all. So in case you all didn't know, we're coming up on 600 Apple Podcast reviews, which is good, but we need to get to 1,000 by the end of the year. So truthfully, I'm going to be honest, we need to pace it up a little bit. So for those of you all who are listening and haven't yet written your Apple Podcast review, thank you so much for doing it after listening to this. It's 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, and I'll leave a little video as to how to do it in the comments below. But in all seriousness, thank you so much to everyone who's reviewing. We're a missional show. And when you review our show, it bumps up the Screenwriting Life in the algorithm. So it's more easy to find. And, you know, in that way, you can help us reach other writers and grow our community and create this weirdly sacred corner of the internet where everyone is nice and supportive. It's the best. I'm going to start with a review from WordWorker6, who says, as an older emerging writer aspiring to television, I listen to a variety of writerly and crafty and even when do you get up, write/have-a-life-ish podcasts. This one is a go-to for me for one reason, story and storytelling, and the reinforcement of just how hard it is and what a privilege it is if you can be doing it for a living. The love of story and craft, as well as the struggle and the headspace of difficult brain work that goes into telling stories, is palpable in these conversations. They reinforce to me that work is hard and the profession is even harder, and that hard-focused work can lead you to get to where you want. Listening to these conversations, I don't feel as alone because the creativity is the struggle. It is real and the struggle never ends. And this podcast reflects the creative life back to me in a way that makes me feel less isolated in the pursuit. How wonderful.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Google Google C says, nurturing, intelligent, and informative. Though I'm late to this podcast, I've now had the pleasure of binging it. I'm an older emerging writer, and Meg, Lorian, and Jeff provide a nurturing, intelligent, and super informative podcast. Their generosity and vulnerability nurture this new writer's soul. Their guests and their own experience challenge and inspire, and it's a treat to grow with you. Thank you for sharing your screenwriting life with us. It makes our screenwriting life better with each episode. Wonderful.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, thank you.
And then this last one from Drive Time Brain Food says, normalize the lava. Without your candid conversations around your experience and your thoughtful expositions on craft, this emerging writer would never have found the guts to jump into the lava and just go write. You've helped me normalize the crazy anxiety and emotions as simply a part of the process and not take either as a sign that I need to quit writing. I am a writer, so I will write and I will push through the doubt. Thank you.
Woo. You are a writer.
You are a writer.
Well, thank you so much to all those who review.
Thank you, everyone.
And, we really appreciate it. And again, we feel so humbled and warm and kind of fuzzy by how wonderful all of you are that have kind of joined this weird roller coaster with us. So thank you.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks you guys so much for listening.
If you haven't yet, we'd love to have you join us on the Screenwriting Life Facebook group. It's a really lovely place to meet other writers and find additional support outside the podcast.
And I'm going to post a poem there about exhaustion and rest. So I'm going to go post it there. We will have a new episode next week, and then I will be out on my vacation for about a month, but we will be offering new shows during that time, including a live two-part series recorded from our panels in the 2022 San Luis Obispo Film Festival.
And a lot of you have asked about log lines. And yesterday we recorded a very helpful Patreon workshop with awesome producer and former guest, Sheila Hanahan Taylor.
So that episode will be available for our Patreon members this Monday. So if you've been considering joining, now would be a great time.
Thank you, everyone. And remember, you are not alone, and keep writing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show. You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.